This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I think one of the things that I've really come to see and understand is that the medicinal versus recreational are regulatory labels, but they don't necessarily follow how people use the product.
California, the nation's most populous state, votes again this fall on the legalization of marijuana. It's yet another sign that the century-long prohibition may finally be lifting, one state at a time. This week on Sea Change Radio, we bring you four interviews from the National Cannabis Industry Association Conference, held recently in Oakland, California. I talk with industry leaders and ganjapreneurs involved in horticulture, distribution, extraction, and marketing of the nation's fastest growing crop, and find out what legalization would mean for their respective businesses. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Matthew Huron. He is the founder of Good Chemistry. Matt, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So what is Good Chemistry for our listeners?
Good Chemistry is a Colorado medical and recreational marijuana facility, dispensary, and cultivation.
And give us a snapshot of the company.
Yeah. So I got started in the industry in 2000 with my father and his partner, who were both HIV positive. They were finding therapeutic benefits as well as many of their friends at that time, and we decided that we wanted to start a small medical marijuana co-op, and which we did. And so I started cultivating medical marijuana at that time. We started delivering to a variety of assisted living facilities and hospice care facilities, and kind of began very organically in that fashion. And you know, over time, I ran that co-op for close to a decade. It grew rather large to a rather large co-op and delivery service. And unfortunately, in 2008, my father's partner passed, and shortly after, in 2009, my dad passed away. And you know, I was left with this rather large co-op at that time. And you know, as been discussed, I'm sure, you know, California is still very much in a gray market with the medical marijuana, and in particular with the cultivation side of the equation. There's not a lot of guidance from the state or many cities on how to run a really kind of more regulated cultivation. And, you know, I felt a little bit uncomfortable at that time with the size of the operation and the risk that I was taking, feeling that law enforcement many times doesn't really respect, you know, patient documentation and kind of, you know, the spirit of the law, if you will. So I was fortunate enough to have a friend that lived in Colorado, and he, you know, said, hey, you should come take a look. There's a lot of dispensaries popping up here, and, you know, I know you're in the industry. So I did, and you know, it was just a really fortunate time in my life where, you know, I had 10 years plus of cultivation experience, really working in a very highly competitive market here in California. Some of the best cultivators and growers in the country, and really learned a lot here. And I was able to take that skill set and move it to Colorado, which was really at the beginning of being the first state in the country to regulate marijuana from a state level process. We're really taking the gray out of it and making it very black and white. And I found that very attractive. You know, for me, again, I feel like regulations are our friend, and not just to protect me individually as a business owner from federal law enforcement, but also as we've expanded on regulations over the years and we've worked on these regulations, they really provide for more public safety. There's testing, pesticides, all, you know, you name it, we're tested. And yes, it's cumbersome, but it also allows users to feel a lot more comfortable, whether it's medicinal or now in Colorado, recreational.
And what would you say to your colleagues in the industry who operate in California with the legalization bill on the ballot? If it passed, how should they expect this legalization process to affect their business?
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging because, you know, California is a huge state, as we know, and there's, you know, medical marijuana market, you know, is 20 years old. So there's a lot of livelihoods, there's a lot of households, a lot of people that are depending on the medical marijuana industry and that system to work. And I think with the new medical marijuana regulations, as well as I think what will be envisioned for recreational, is there's going to be a lot more local control. There's going to be a lot more conversations around zoning. Where should these things go? You know, is should they be in residential neighborhoods in a garage, or should they be in commercial areas?
You mean the dispensaries?
Dispensaries or cultivations edibles or concentrate manufacturing facilities. You know, where, similar to Colorado, where should they be? I mean, should we have a butane extraction manufacturing facility in a house next, you know, in a residential neighborhood, or is that in commercial use? And, you know, those types of conversations will be beneficial for some that potentially already have their operations in areas that are going to be accepted by local jurisdictions. But for others, that it may be a challenge. And so I do think there's going to be a conflict. And I think you know, California's a big barge, right? It's going to take time for that to turn, you know, and so I understand that the conflict between many folks within that. But, you know, again, ultimately, I think for the long term success of the industry overall, both medical and recreational, that, you know, regulations have to be embraced. I mean, again, from a 50,000 foot view, I mean, you know, the social justice issue is paramount, right? I mean, it's insane that folks are being put in jail for marijuana, and it's been a tool that law enforcement has used for many, many years to, you know, help incarcerate folks, and
usually the most vulnerable population,
yeah,
as well.
So, you know, from a social justice standpoint, I mean, absolutely, it needs to be legalized and regulated and treated like a normal industry.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Matt Huron. He is the co-founder of Good Chemistry. With the evolution of the legalization of marijuana in Colorado, where you're based, talk about how consumers have become more discerning when it comes to product.
Yeah, I think, you know, so legalization was a little over 24 months, or the first stores were open a little over 24 months. And I think initially many, many people were just really excited, back to the social justice conversation, to be able to walk into a store for the first time in history and buy legal marijuana. It was, you know, what they were buying, the product they were buying, was a kind of an afterthought. It was just wow. And what we're seeing now is, you know, that thrill, at least in Colorado, is kind of starting to pass. And a lot of, especially on the rec side, a lot of the consumers are starting to ask a lot more questions about product quality, product differences. You know, what exactly are they buying? What are these different strains? You know, the medical patient base is a much more educated, heavy user base. The rec customer, on average, is much more of a novice, call it, you know, a weekend warrior marijuana smoker, doesn't buy a large amounts of marijuana.
And while Sea Change Radio listeners might roll their eyes and think, oh, well, good cannabis is good cannabis, it's important to remember where the industry was in the dark ages, in the early 80s, in the Reagan years, where people were worried about their kids smoking because, not because of marijuana, but because of what the DEA might be spraying on product, what might be coming across the border from, like, PCP to, I can't remember the pesticide, but
yeah,
those days are long gone.
They are in Colorado. And again, back to why regulations are good and why it's important for public, it's a public safety issue. You know, I mean, the fact of the matter is we are tested for pesticides, molds, microbials, you name it. We are tested. I mean, the food side is tested. The concentrate side is tested for solvents and the percentage that's in those products. And that's it's a public safety issue, and it's important we are, and it can be rigorous at times, and we got to jump through a lot of hoops, but it's the best for the industry.
Matthew Huron of Good Chemistry. Matt, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much.
Roll another blunt. Yeah. Okay. La la da 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 da. La da da. La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. Yeah. I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. My room is still messed up, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, hey, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La da 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 da. I was gonna go to class before I got high. Come on, y'all. Check it out.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Nancy Whiteman. She's the owner of Wana Brands. Nancy, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So first, why don't you tell our listeners your experience in the cannabis industry. What is Wana Brands all about?
Sure. Wana Brands is an infused products company in Colorado. We're based in Boulder, and we've been in business since 2010. We have three product lines. We've got edibles, concentrates, including hash and vape oil, and a line of medicinal products as well.
And how big is the company in terms of headcount? And why don't you give us an idea of the arc of the company since
sure.
legalization in your state?
Yes. Well, we kind of had, I would say, two waves. When we got into the business in 2010, it was just medicinal. And we started very small, three people all in a kitchen, et cetera. And, you know, fast forward now, we've been in the recreational market in addition to the medical market for about a year and a half. And we're closing in on 100 employees. And we have about 6,000 square feet of kitchen space and growing rapidly.
And when you say growing rapidly, you don't actually grow?
We don't, actually, no. We actually, we work with growers in partnership, and we purchase or trade for our trim.
So as you've grown from a three-person company to a 100-person company, how has it worked in terms of scale and purchasing your product?
Well, scale obviously helps quite a bit. In a couple of ways. First of all, the bigger you get, the more you can afford machinery, which allows you to get away from some of the labor costs. But the biggest thing is, of course, as you grow, you also have to add a lot more overhead and a lot of overhead positions. And the more you sell, the more you get to spread that overhead across a lot of products, and so your profitability is better.
Explain to our listeners how edibles and concentrates break down. Let's assume I'm going into a shop and I don't want to put anything in my lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Walk me through the process like I'm a moron.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the amazing things about cannabis is that it can be delivered in so many different ways. And I would roughly break them down into some big buckets. So you have inhalants like smoking and vaporizing, and then orals like edibles and capsules, and then topicals. And then you've got some outliers there like suppositories and nasal sprays, which are not very popular yet. But on the edible side of things, most of what you will see out there are things that fall into the sweet versus savory categories. Our biggest seller is our sour gummies, which are extremely popular. On the concentrate side, if you don't want to smoke, then your option would be vape and vaporizers. And those have become really, really popular over the last decade. They use a very similar technology to the e-cigarettes. And what the vaporizing does is it heats up the cannabis to a point where it releases the cannabinoids, but it doesn't release some of the toxins that would be released through smoking.
And break down the THC levels and what that means for either a cancer patient or somebody who just wants to use it for recreational use. How does somebody know how much they're getting in terms of the buzz?
So it's very dependent on how you ingest the cannabis. Edibles have a big advantage in that if you get a professionally made edible, first of all, it's been lab tested, so you know exactly what the potency is. And secondly, in a state like Colorado, you have to present it in discrete chunks of no more than 10 milligrams each. So you can certainly dose precisely with a professionally made edible. In terms of how much you need to take, that is very variable based on the person, your experience with cannabis, your tolerance to cannabis. With the case of edibles, it'll depend on what else you've eaten that day, your stress level, your sleep, etc. But typically, a novice user of cannabis, we recommend that they start somewhere between 5 and 10 milligrams. And our favorite expression is start low and go slow. Start with a very low dosage, wait at least an hour and a half to see how you feel, and then if you're not feeling anything, you can add a little bit more. The bad experiences that people have with edibles almost inevitably come down to people not experienced with them who take too much, and it's an uncomfortable, intense experience.
And the inevitable question that I'm sure you always hear, what happens if my kid gets into it? Like, these are candies, essentially. You said your most popular edible is this sour gummy.
Well, if your kids get into it, you're doing something wrong, and I'm going to tell you why. Everything is sold in a child-resistant, reclosable container. And so they should not be able to get into it. If you are leaving it out and about, it's like any other substance that you shouldn't be doing that with. I'm sure we wouldn't want parents to do that with any attractive nuisance, a gun or anything else. So at the end of the day, the industry certainly holds some responsibility for making it safe, and I think that we've done that. And then the parents hold some responsibility for making sure that it's safe within their household. I'd also say that as a substance, THC has the lowest toxicity of almost anything out there. If you look up the statistics on what children overdose on, it's way, 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 way at the bottom of the list. Things like makeup and household bleach and things like that, that people would never think of locking up, are far more likely to hurt children.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the owner of Wana Brands, Nancy Whiteman. So Nancy, you're probably aware that California, the sixth largest economy in the world, is now considering legalization. It was shot down 6 years ago, but is back on the ballot in the fall. As a cannabis business owner from the medicinal stage through the legalization process in Colorado, how has your perspective changed along with the laws in your state?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I think one of the things that I've really come to see and understand is that the medicinal versus recreational are regulatory labels, but they don't necessarily follow how people use the product. So, for example, in Colorado, I think when it was only medicinal, we had lots of people who were getting medical cards and using it primarily recreationally. By the same token, there's many, many, many people, in fact, many more, I would say, who have chosen not to get medical cards and go to recreational dispensaries, but are in fact using the product medicinally. And I know this for a fact because we have products that are high CBD products, which means there's very limited psychoactivity, and they actually sell better in the recreational dispensaries in some cases than the medical dispensaries.
Now, what do you attribute that to? Is that because people just don't want the stigma of getting a medicinal card, or the hassle, or what?
Yeah, it could be all of those things. You know, for example, in Colorado, when you get a medicinal card, you have to register for it, you have to pay for it, and it's tracked every time you make a purchase. By the same token, when you go into a recreational dispensary, you show your driver's license or proof of age, and you're done. There's no record being kept. So I do think that there's a hassle factor, there's the having to get a doctor certify you for it, and a lot of people are perfectly happy just to go to a recreational dispensary, pay a little bit more because of the taxes, but they don't have to go through all the hoops that they would need to go to get the medical card.
Nancy Whiteman, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
My money on my mind. Rolling nice straight, smoking in, oh.
sipping on gin and juice, laid back.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by my friend Kevin Dolan. He's the co-founder of Bogart LLC. Kevin, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex.
So what is Bogart?
Bogart is an equipment manufacturing and sales company. We produce and sell equipment for concentration of essential oils from plant material.
And give us a snapshot of the concentrate and extraction industry, if you can. What percentage of the industry is it at this point?
Well, if you're talking about cannabis concentrate specifically, it's consumed in many different forms. The most popular these days is called a dab, which is basically consumed by a vaporization process through a like a glass bong, if you will. And that's a good percentage of it is used that way, but it's also used in topicals, sodas, mixed with food products, candy, and pills.
So the edibles market uses concentrates?
Absolutely.
And what kind of technology is Bogart offering its clients? What makes you different than the traditional ways of extraction?
Well, this process has been going on for a number of years, decades really, but it's traditionally been done by an amateur with a tube and basically a can of lighter fluid. And the tube is filled with plant material and the lighter fluid is injected in one end and comes out the other end into like a glass container where it's later evaporated off into the air and the concentrate is left behind. And that was the cause for many explosions and, of course, the release of thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of cans of lighter fluid directly into the air where it would be released into the ozone layer. And Bogart came into the picture to try to make this a safer process and to be able to utilize and recycle that gas again. We've created a closed loop system that allows you to capture all of that gas and put it into a recovery tank and utilize it again. So it's much safer and it's much more effective, and you can use much higher quality starting solvents like butane or propane that are highly processed in order to make them very pure.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Kevin Dolan. He's the co-founder of Bogart LLC. So Kevin, speaking of efficiency and clean, how do concentrates play a role in reducing the industry's carbon footprint?
Well, in the first place, it allows you to utilize all the parts of the plant. So parts of the plant that were traditionally thrown away or underutilized are now thrown into a machine which allows you to concentrate it and get the maximum amount of yield and maximum amount of useful product out of a given grow operation. So in that respect, it decreases the amount of energy required to make the same amount of medicine. It also allows the machine operator or the facility operator utilizing the equipment to capture all of his solvent and recover it again for later use. So it's recycled and not blown off into the air and wasted. So lots of greenhouse gases are saved in that process, and a lot of money is saved as well. Also, of course, a concentrated product is much smaller and lighter and therefore reduces your transportation cost from your grow facility to your end user.
Kevin Dolan of Bogart, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me here, Alex.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Shelley Peterson from Urban Grow out of Denver, Colorado. Shelley, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
We wanted to talk about lighting and sustainability within the growing part of the industry. How has the industry changed over the last few years in terms of outside versus indoor growing?
So there's three ways of growing. And since the industry has been coming out of the basement, a lot of these larger facilities have been done indoor in a warehouse. In the last couple of years, there's been a shift from warehouses into greenhouses. And then also there is a huge population that still grows completely outdoor. But given climate and if you want to grow year round, different parts of the country, you can't grow the crop completely outdoor. So you might get one cycle turn in Colorado, and a lot of people do grow completely outdoor there. But for the large commercial cultivators that want to grow on a year-round basis, they've been either in a warehouse or they've been in a greenhouse. And greenhouses are new, and that's where it's headed. And in the last couple years, there's been a good shift of understanding that the product is just as good, can be better if grown correctly in a greenhouse with the natural sunlight. And by doing that, you're reducing your energy consumption by 60-70% just by using the natural sunlight and supplementing that in the wintertime with light.
And do you have any idea of the breakdown between greenhouse, indoor, and outdoor growing in Colorado?
In Colorado, most everything is still grown indoors. I mean, we're seeing more and more greenhouses being built in southern Colorado, Pueblo, but we're working on projects all across the country right now that there's massive greenhouses being built. I mean, right now, most of the planning we're doing, I still say it's probably like a 50-50 split on the planning side between indoor and greenhouses. But I'm seeing more and more people starting to shift towards that more sustainable model of greenhouses.
But your company is focusing more on indoor growing, correct?
No. So PL Light Systems has been selling to the horticulture market for 40 years and supplementing light in greenhouses. So our focus has always been on greenhouses. It shifted a little bit of this industry because of the indoor nature. So our fixtures can be indoor, but they really were truly built for greenhouses.
And give us an idea, if you will, stacking from most to least sustainable are the three different modes of growing. Why don't you give us an idea of how greenhouse varies from an outdoor growing and indoor in terms of sustainability?
Well, we don't typically deal a lot with the outdoor grower because I'm supplementing light, and so I can really focus on the differences between indoor and a greenhouse. So to go from an indoor to a greenhouse, you could save up to 70% of energy costs. I mean, you're going to get over half of your light from the sun, and so you're just supplementing. So that means you're not running your lights. Even in the summer, you're probably not running your lights hardly at all. So you're just supplementing for a few hours a day possibly, and then for the rest of the year, you're supplementing that light source of when you're not accumulating enough.
Shelley Peterson from Urban Grow, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by John Schofield, Afro Man, and The Gourds. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.